Cleveland's Hot Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Tyson fires, Morneau swings, loops one into center field, out goes Etch, a long way out, he dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
It's the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Same place, new face tonight. Geff's out of town with the family this weekend, but not to worry, he'll be back with you for all 2 hours next week. I'm Kyle Seeloff, joining you for an hour this evening, and we've got a lot to get to in the hour, including a couple of interviews. Our first with Marlins starting pitcher Jared Cosart, who will get on the line in just a moment. He's surely expected to play a large role in the success of the Marlins here in 2015. I'll be sure to take some of your phone calls tonight as well. I'll fill you in on all the upcoming events from inside the Marlins, including the Miami Marlins winter warm-up at Marlins Park and Jack McKeon's outstanding celebrity golf tournament he hosts out on Key Biscayne. Both events are quickly approaching. Would you believe it if I told you we're just a little over 4 weeks away until the start of spring training up at Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter? 32 days from tonight, to be exact. And boy, it feels like just yesterday we closed the curtain on the 2014 season up in Washington. It's been quite the offseason for the Marlins. Giancarlo Stanton's in it for the long haul. Who's not happy about that? Glenn's chatted with newcomers D. Gordon, Michael Morse, and Matt Latos, who are sure to make an impact here in 2015 as well. But what about some of the guys that already occupy this current roster? You look up and down this lineup and see nothing but the promise. Some youth, speed, power, some terrific defenders. But like all teams, we know that play into October, they rely heavily on the guys that take the ball every fifth day. Outside of health, a solid pitching staff is certainly a key to success. It'll certainly be a key ingredient to the Marlins' recipe for success this season. And joining us on the phone right now is Marlins starting pitcher Jared Cosart, who got a little glimpse of what these Marlins are capable of last season when he was acquired from the Houston Astros on the July 31st trade deadline. Jared, thanks for taking a couple of minutes tonight. How's the offseason been, and what have you been up to?
Not too much. It's one of the coldest winters we've had here in Houston for a while, and yes, 40 is cold to us. Just been going through my normal workouts and playing some catch and getting some family time, playing a little golf when I can. Not too much. Pretty low-key offseason for me.
How's the golf game coming along?
Not too bad. I can't complain. Ready to get out there in spring training and play with some of the other guys. I know it's going to be an intense competition, but I try and make fun out of it as well.
You talked a little bit about your off-season routine. The one that you've grown accustomed to, have you already begun the process of getting ready for this season, or will that begin for you in the coming days and weeks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I began trying to mentally prepare for the coming season about a month and a half ago, but I've been in the weight room for about a month and a half as well. Started throwing a couple weeks ago, so I have a pretty intense workout schedule with the trainer I have, and then trying to get conditioning in and staying up to date with playing catch and whatnot. I'll probably throw my first bullpen here in the next week or so, and you know, it's just an exciting time. Obviously, we have the luxury, but it also kind of stinks to have such a long off season because, you know, we all love to play baseball and that's our job. So I've been itching to get back for about 2 weeks now, really wishing it was spring training already.
Marlins starting pitcher Jared Cosart with us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Jared, if I'm not mistaken, I recall last year you said you know Clayton Kershaw on a more personal level and the amount of work he puts into his game day in and day out. Tell us a little bit about that relationship. What's it like and how much have you learned from him? I'm certain that that's not a bad guy to learn from, is it?
We had the pleasure of having the same agent and it's mainly getting to talk and pick his brain about, you know, it's more he focuses a lot on the video stuff and a lot on the mental game, so hopefully that's something I can carry over to next year. And then obviously his workout routines are very intense, and that the effort he puts in to be one of the best pitchers in the game is obviously something that I think everyone should know that he doesn't take for granted, and he worked really hard for every penny of that big contract that he got.
Through your conversations with Clayton, what's the one thing you've learned?
Really, don't let what anyone else thinks about you change what you do. You know, be the pitcher that you are. You know, a lot of people told him about how weird it is mechanically to look at the stretch and how unorthodox his delivery is, and You know, but it's comfortable for him, and he felt the most comfortable in that aspect, and he could throw strikes with that delivery, and he could repeat that delivery, and I think I don't think there's any scouts or anything second-guessing it now after 6 or 7 years of being second-guessed, so I think that's number one thing.
Jared, you're 24 years old. You started your professional career when you were 18. Fast forward 6 years later, and you've got 2 years of Major League Baseball under your belt, 40 games to be exact. You've been traded twice, once by the Phillies and most recently last July by the Astros. Before I ask you about your experience thus far in Major League Baseball, what's the rigorous life of professional baseball taught you?
Don't get too comfortable, I guess. It's definitely a business. I think coming in blind out of high school, I thought I was going to be a Philly for the rest of my life and was kind of just there to go about the business and didn't know about all this stuff like trades and everything like that. But it's definitely, you know, I tell everyone now, my brother's just getting involved and everything like that. You know, it's a business, so the only thing you can do is prepare yourself the best you can to go out there and execute every pitch each and every day and just let everything else take care of itself. But at the same time, you know, don't get too comfortable, don't get too caught up in everything with one organization. You know, obviously it'd be nice to be a Marlin for the rest of my career, but if that's not in the cards, it's not in the cards. So you just go out there and work hard every day and try and do the best you can to help the team you're with at the current time win a World Series.
Your brother was drafted by the Boston Red Sox last year. What's that experience been like throughout the entire Cosart family?
It's fun. You know, we have hopefully my youngest brother, he'll be a sophomore this year in junior college. Hopefully he'll get a chance as well. But, you know, it's always been a lot of brotherly jabbing, a lot of friendly competition amongst the household, you know, all growing up and stuff. So, you know, we have our fun, but, you know, we've had our times with, you know, he's asked some questions and, you know, I do the best I can to help him. But in the end, I try and keep it simple and tell him to do the same. You know, don't get too caught up in all the press clippings and all the prospect rankings and stuff. You know, you just go out there and work hard and let everything else take care of itself.
Jared Cosart with us tonight on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. I remember chatting with you last August, shortly after you joined the Marlins, and I'll never forget you said people have doubted you your entire life. An 38th round draft pick, going back to high school, they said you couldn't hit, you couldn't pitch. I'm sure that was a tough one to hear, but has that, in a sense, added the fuel to your fire? Do you attribute any of that doubt to your current success?
You know, yeah, absolutely. I think everyone, you know, at any level has had some sort of doubt. I don't know if it's maybe my, you know, my edge or my competitive side that just sees more of the doubt that I've received. But, you know, I think everyone should use that as fuel, you know. It causes me to work harder. And, you know, obviously there's someone out there that's better than you, maybe numbers-wise and whatnot. But if, you know, I truly believe if you don't think that you're the best pitcher in the game, that's not the best mindset to have. I mean, I think you need to think of yourself as the best pitcher. And that's that, and go out there and work like it and try and show that. So, like you said, I've had people tell me I couldn't hit and I set the batting average record. I had people tell me I never get drafted. Obviously I got drafted late, which being a projected top rounder was tough falling that far. And then people said, you know, there's a lot of people that never make it out of the minor leagues, you know, good luck. It's a long road. And, you know, I just put my head down and with the support of my family and friends and stuff, made the process a lot easier, but there's still bumps along the way, obviously. But yeah, I mean, you got to have something that motivates you. If you're just going to the field every day with no motivation, I think you're in for a long road and a lot more downs than ups.
Well, you talked about the minor league life, but the big league life. You've been in Major League Baseball now for 2 seasons. What's it like for those that don't know to be a big leaguer?
It's actually a lot more, you know, pressure and stress on you to keep your, you know, you want to keep your job. It's the whole cliche saying someone in the minor league is trying to come take it. And, you know, that's truly how I view it. And that's, I think that helps me work a lot harder to stay there. But I mean, if you're comparing to the minor league, it's 100 times better. You know, we have access to all sorts of video. You know, obviously the amenities we have with the travel and the hotels and the locker rooms and the facilities are top notch. And you know, but like I said, you know, you'd hear in the minor leagues, you know, act like a big leaguer, get treated like a big leaguer. And I see that now, you know, with everything that we have access to, what they were talking about. And you know, it's something that I'm blessed to be a part of, and I don't want to take for granted.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you here with the Marlins this year and for many years to come. I don't think there's any doubt that this year could be a special one here in Miami. When you look at this team along with the pieces that have been added this offseason, what's the most intriguing part of this team in your mind?
I mean, I, to be honest, I had a sense, you know, when I was hearing all the talk about G getting a big contract, that, you know, they were going to make some moves, and they showed it, man. I mean, they signed getting Latos over to bolster the rotation, you know, adding a speed element in Gordon, adding another power bat in Morris. You know, I think just overall in general, I think the whole team's just going to be exciting. We can do a lot of different things and a lot of different aspects. I think we had one of the best bullpens in baseball last year, which as a starter is always a luxury if you get in a jam, which is going to happen over 35 starts. You know, we got a couple different guys in the lineup that can run with Gordon and Yelich. And, you know, they're going to get on base and wreak some havoc and get in scoring position for guys like Ozuna and G and Morris to drive in. I mean, I just think the balance of the team is what stands out the most to me now. You know, we got four or five guys in our lineup that can hit 20-plus home runs. And we got two guys that can steal 30, 40 bases. And we just got a lot of balance throughout the lineup, and you know, the guys that often get overlooked, Jeff Baker coming off the bench, one of the best righties against lefties in the league, and our backup catcher is one of the best game callers and catchers in the league. So I mean, just to have those guys coming off the bench and in the clubhouse with what we already have in place, you know, I mean, I'm super excited, and I think everyone around baseball is starting to give us some credit, which I know we won't put too much stock into, because, you know, last year we weren't expected to do much at all. So it's just about trying to overachieve and exceed expectations, which we did last year. And obviously now the expectations are a little higher, but, you know, we have every piece of the puzzle to get the job done. And obviously, you know, one game at a time over a 162-game season. It's a long road.
Well, you talk about that lineup, and a part of it that's really intriguing is a new guy, D. Gordon, and you really look at him and you say, boy, this could be fun. A lot's been talked about what he brings to the table as a pitcher. Having a guy that can get on base to lead off a game, steal a base, score a run in the first inning, single-handedly kind of score a run himself, that's got to be a nice luxury to have as a pitcher, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I faced him in AAA a couple years ago, and you know, the scouting report on a guy like that is you're actually trying to get him to hit the ball in the air, because quite frankly he could beat a ball into the ground to second base and beat it out. So you know, and then as a pitcher, you know you have to be conscious of him over there holding the ball and varying your times, and that can get in your head no matter what anyone says. I know as you get older and as you progress, it gets easier. But for me, you know, knowing that he's over there definitely is in pitcher's head and definitely in the catcher's head. So, you know, it's going to be super exciting. Obviously, yeah, like you said, run support early in the game is a lot more relaxing for a starter. And it gives me extra cushion and wants me to go out there and establish the zone, pound the zone, and with an early lead.
Just a couple more minutes with Marlins starting pitcher Jared Cosart on the Hot Stove Show tonight. And Jared, since you came over last July, we've seen the passion. You're animated. You're fiery when you're on the mound and in the dugout. Where does that come from?
You know, I think this goes back to the super competitive nature I've always had around the household. You know, both my parents played collegiate sports, and my brothers play, and we're always having, you know, whether we played dice or Yahtzee or cards on the household, it's always been an extreme competition starting at a young age. So I think that kind of attributes to that. And, you know, I'm completely 100% dedicated to baseball, man. It's my life, and I want to be the best I can. And I'm super, super locked in when I'm out there, and honestly don't realize some of the stuff I do until I see it afterwards. So
for you personally in 2015, this upcoming season, what have you been working on, and what can we expect? Anything new out of Jared Cosart on the mound this year?
I think number one is, you know, I want to throw 200-plus innings this year and stay healthy. And, you know, that's what I've been preparing my body for, trying to be in the best shape I can physically and mentally, because, you know, that 200-inning mark is huge for a ball club. If they can have one, two, three starters reach that, it's probably a good sign for a lot of wins, helping the bullpen out and helping the offense out. So I think that's all of our goal as a starting staff. You know, I've talked with Tom this offseason. Obviously, I haven't got to meet Latos yet, but I know Hendo's down in Dominican working hard. So it's going to be good. All of our starting staff, we have similar stuff, so it's going to be fun to pick each other's brains going into series and see how we all want to attack each other. And I think the biggest goal, like I said, is to stay healthy. That's something you can control. So just staying on my shoulder stuff. But as far as the pitching-wise, I'd say, you know, I'm trying to develop a changeup more and a fastball command. You know, obviously, if I can cut down on some walks, that's going to be big for me, keep them off the bases and get the offense into the dugout and up there to score some more runs. So I'm trying to keep it simple, nothing too complicated. I know last year before I got traded, I was getting way too into mechanical stuff, but when I came over to Miami, Chuck had me get back to what I knew best and just attacking the zone and using my edge out there and not thinking about mechanics.
Jared, last question before I let you go. On a lighter note, what's the plan offensively this year? I know you love to swing the bat. Are you going to fine-tune that swing, or is manager Mike Redmond going to have to tell you to chill out a little bit in spring training?
No, I'm gonna make sure I don't strain an oblique down there early. I'm going to get ready and started swinging lightly, but it goes back to the competitive edge. I want to help myself any way I can, get on base, something, let those guys at the top of the order drive me in. I'm not claiming to be able to hit anymore, but I'm going to go up there and try and have competitive at bats. And I know Bugsy and Bone want me to get my bunts down, so that's what I'll work on the most.
Jared, thanks for taking a few minutes with us tonight. Looking forward to seeing you and the rest of the guys in Jupiter in a couple of weeks. Good luck this season. Stay healthy, and we'll chat with you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
That was Jared Kosart with us tonight on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. If you missed any of our interview with Jared or any previous Hot Stove shows, you can always listen again on marlins.com/podcasts, marlins.com/hotstoveshow, or marlins.com/radio. Coming up next, the Marlins have a new arm to deal with in the National League East. Will Ichiro play a couple of years in South Florida? In the latest on Dan Heron, all that and more when we return with the Marlins Hot Stove Show on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
Keep your hand on the hot stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner, 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Well, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show. I'm Kyle Seeloff, taking you up to the top of the hour tonight. Great to be back with you. We'll open up the phone lines here shortly, so go ahead and get your Marlins questions ready. Number to call in, 866-801-0940. Or if you'd like to tweet any questions my way, you can go right ahead. My Twitter handle is Kyle_Seeloff, S-I-E-L-A-F-F. Well, if you haven't heard the big news of the day around Major League Baseball, you will in just a second. It'll certainly have a direct impact on the Marlins as Max Scherzer has agreed to a 7-year deal with the Washington Nationals that'll pay him $210 million. Now, it sounds as if half of that money's been deferred, so Scherzer will make $15 million a year for 14 years. Now, outside of the financial side of that contract, how about the starting pitching staffs in the National League East here in 2015? Namely, the Nationals, Marlins, and Mets. I think there was a feeling over the course of this offseason that something just felt a bit off of the Nationals, but maybe not anymore after the signing of Max Scherzer. When you take a look at the starting pitching stats between Miami, Washington, and New York, it may just be the best of any division in baseball. Atlanta and Philadelphia have some top-notch starting pitchers as well, but when you take a look at the three teams expected to vie for the National League East crown this season, you have Strasburg, Scherzer, Zimmerman, Roark, Gonzalez, and Pfister in Washington, Cologne, DeGrom, Nice, G, Harvey, and Wheeler in New York, and well, you know the story with the Marlins, Alvarez, Kosart, Kohler, Latos, Hand, and Jose Fernandez. When he returns in July, it's absolutely loaded in the East, and it's going to be quite fun to see how things play out over the course of 162 games this season. You know, in regards to those staffs in Washington and New York, they've got a couple of surplus arms. Jordan Zimmerman's name has been tossed into the hat as a viable trade piece if the Nationals elected to do so and go that way. And as for the Mets, Jonathan Nice and Dylan G are a couple of guys' names that have been thrown around as trade pieces as well. So I would expect one, if not both, of those teams may trade a starting pitcher before the regular season gets underway. So that's the story around Major League Baseball. How about some news on the Marlins front? I alluded to it before we went to break. Are the Marlins open to a two-year deal with Ichiro Suzuki? Joe Fracero, Marlins beat reporter, wrote yesterday for MLB.com that the Marlins have picked up talks with the 10-time All-Star outfielder and that they are open to bringing the 41-year-old to South Florida. As you know, the Marlins are searching for a fourth outfielder, and it sounds as if they're making a strong pitch towards Ichiro's camp. Ichiro's career has been a terrific one, to say the least. In the States, in Major League Baseball, 14 seasons, a career 317 hitter. He's got 2,844 hits, 156 shy of 3,000. Do you like it? Do you hate it? I'll open up the phone lines here shortly. Feel free to call in with your thoughts on the Marlins bringing Ichiro to Miami, 866-801-0940. Again, the Marlins to the studio. Here's my thoughts on that. I'm a bit surprised Ichiro hasn't made a strong push to remain in the American League somewhere as a designated hitter. All the talk is that he feels good, he looks good. I know he's older, 41 years old, but with that being said, maybe no American League ball club has checked in on him, but if he's capable of being a strong fourth option in the outfield here in Miami, I mean, why not, right? Realistically speaking, the chances Marcell Ozuna, Christian Yelich, and Giancarlo Stanton each play 155 to 162 games is probably pretty slim. You may not like to hear it, but if you can run Ichiro out there, if one of those guys goes down for a brief time, the Marlins may not skip a beat, but we'll have to wait and see. I'd imagine if this deal were to get done, it might come sooner rather than later. And something else to keep an eye on as well. Now, it sounds as if former Tiger utility man, 34-year-old Don Kelly, has agreed to a minor league deal with the Marlins. If the Ichiro scenario doesn't play out, Kelly may very well be the fourth outfielder. He hit .245 for the Tigers last season. He spent the last six seasons in Detroit, played at least 95 games in four of those six seasons. So certainly a guy to watch closely this spring. How about on Friday? Seven Marlins were arbitration eligible. Four came to an agreement. Three of them did not. Among the four Marlins that did come to an agreement, Steve Cishek will make $6.65 million in 2015. Henderson Alvarez, $4 million. Dee Gordon, $2.5 million. Keep in mind, Gordon's contract will be paid by the Dodgers. And Aaron Crow, who will make $1.975 million this season. As for Mike Dunn, Matt Latos, and David Phelps, they were unable to settle, but as Joe Fracero reported, it doesn't sound like all three parties involved were too far off. Miami is a combined $1.72 million apart between all three. So now what'll happen is sometime between February 1st and the 21st, the arbitration panel will choose one of two monetary values, either the one the club has offered or the one that particular player is seeking. So we'll keep our eye out on that over the course of the next couple weeks. And lastly, will Dan Heron be with the Marlins in 2015? Heron continues to express his interest in being close to his family out west, but it does sound as if he will report to spring training, which begins for pitchers and catchers on Friday, February 20th, up at Roger Dean Stadium. Now, as you know, if Heron doesn't pitch for the team, the Marlins will receive $10 million from the Dodgers that can be allocated elsewhere. If he does pitch, the Marlins still aren't on the hook for anything, as Los Angeles will still be paying his salary in 2015. The Marlins made out quite nice in that Dodgers deal financially, if you ask me. There's $12.5 million worth of payroll. If Heron pitches in Miami, the Marlins don't have to pay. We just talked about it. Dee Gordon, through the arbitration, he's going to get $2.5 million this year. And one way or another, they'll get $10 million worth of service or cash from L.A. for Heron. So that aspect of things will be rather interesting. I'll say this, though, and I'm sure Mike Hill and Dan Jennings feel the same way in regards to Heron. You'd really prefer to know sooner rather than later if he's going to be in a Marlins uniform this season. Because if he isn't, that's $10 million the Marlins could be shopping right now in the free agent market, whether it's to lock up another arm or maybe even use some of that trying to secure a deal with a guy like Ichiro. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. So the Marlins looking to wrap up their offseason and tie up any loose ends before we get underway in just a little over a month up in Jupiter. Is Ichiro a Marlin? Does a non-roster invitee make the ball club? We'll just have to wait and see. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, longtime travel director of the Marlins and current special assistant Bill Beck joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show right here on your home for Marlins Baseball, 940 Wins.
Marlins Baseball Hot Stove Talk with Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Great to be with you. I'm Kyle Seeloff, taking you up to the top of the hour tonight. There's a lot going on around baseball, a lot going on in particular with the Marlins this offseason. Max Scherzer in Washington now, a lot of newcomers here in Miami. And joining us right now to chat about all the happenings as a man that's been around the game for many, many years. I'm not too sure there's a person around Major League Baseball he doesn't know. The former Marlins travel director and current Marlins special assistant, Bill Beck. Boomer, it's a pleasure to have you on tonight. Thanks for joining us. How's your offseason been?
Well, the offseason's been good. I'm up here in Jupiter and was at the ballpark today and walking out onto the practice fields. They say do not walk onto the field. The grass is germinating. And it looks absolutely beautiful. So 1 month from now, we'll be ready to go in full gear, and I think everybody's ready for it.
Well, I know up at Roger Dean Stadium, have you got a chance to take a look at some of the new infrastructure in the ballpark for our fans? I understand they put a whole new set of bleachers in.
They did more than just bleachers. They replaced every seat in the ballpark, and work's still ongoing there, but it looks great. And there's some other things, too, that they're doing. Some that the fans won't see, new carpet in the downstairs Marlins clubhouse area and that, and a lot of fresh paint. And but the big item is the new seats that are being put in, and they look real good.
Well, a lot to talk about, Boomer, only so much time to do so. Let's jump right into the big deal of the day. Max Scherzer to Washington. The Marlins will certainly feel the effect of that deal. The amount of pitching in the National League East now is really something, isn't it?
Yeah, you're really right, and I think this deal caught everybody by surprise. I mean, there was talk of the big teams, when I say that, the Yankees, the Dodgers, people like that, maybe the Cubs, going after Scherzer, and all of a sudden, boom, he turns up in Washington, and most of the winter they had been talking a lot about not having financial resources to do some things. They've got two guys that are free agents after this coming season, Jordan Zimmermann, and sister two of their starters, but boy, they shocked the world, and what a rotation now with Scherzer, Jordan Zimmermann, Strasburg, Fister, and Gio Gonzalez, and that doesn't even take into account Tanner Roark, who really pitched well the second half of the year for them, and who knows, maybe they'll make another trade. And then you got the Mets, Matt Harvey coming back. He's been out with Tommy John surgery, and boy, they certainly finished strong last year pitching-wise. DeGrom ends up as the rookie of the year, and the Mets have good pitching. You're right, the division has a lot of good pitching, and the Marlins are in that mix as well.
Well, I know you talked to a lot of folks around baseball, Boomer, and one last thing on the Nationals, and I talked about it earlier, hearing some things throughout the course of the offseason, it felt like some folks thought something was missing there. Something didn't feel right. Do you think this deal with Scherzer kind of sums everything up?
Yeah, that's a pretty imposing rotation. But as you and I know, going in, a lot of things can happen. And there's some questions, who's going to play second base for them. I know they made the trade with Oakland recently. But that's not a settled thing. And their lineup, while it's pretty solid, doesn't scare you quite as much as the starting pitching.
Right.
And then they've got bullpen questions. Obviously, Tyler Clippard going to Oakland was kind of a big surprise, and he was really a great eighth inning guy for him, leading to Drew Storen, who actually took over for Soriano last year as a closer about midway through the year. And this is interesting, Kyle. Last year, the Marlins and the Dodgers got into postseason play, used 13 starting pitchers each during the course of the year. Injuries, poor performance, all of that enters into it. The St. Louis Cardinals, who made the postseason, they used 12 starting pitchers during the year. They had a lot of injuries there. It's really ironic that the San Francisco Giants and the Kansas City Royals, the two teams that played in the Fall Classic, they only used 8 starting pitchers each.
Yep.
So what that tells me is, boy, if you can keep down having to go deep into, you know, the minor leagues or signing free agents to bring pitchers in, it really does make a difference. And they were both lucky, very few injuries. The Giants lost Matt Cain, and that hurt them. But when those two teams only use 8 starting pitchers, that says a lot. So I guess the idea is you can never have too many starting pitchers going in.
Well, some starting pitchers that were within the Marlins organization, now members of other organizations, still got a good one down in the minor leagues. We may see him at some point this season, Justin Nicolino. But when you talk about the Marlins pitching staff, Jared Cosard, Latos, Alvarez, Kohler in hand, not to mention Jose when he returns in July, they're going to have their hands full, especially within the division this year. How do you think this staff stacks up with the rest, and which of those guys I just mentioned do you think will need to have a big year for Miami?
Well, the biggest thing is getting Jose back in hopefully June. I mean, this guy was, if not the premier pitcher in baseball, he was in the top three.
Yep.
So that would make a tremendous difference getting him back. Henderson Alvarez needs to repeat what he did last year. That would be big for us. Jared Cosart came over from Houston, did a good job in the starting rotation, faded maybe a touch at the end. Tom Kohler is a dependable guy who will give you a lot of innings, and you need guys in that fourth and fifth slot that can do that. Now the question is, who's in the fifth slot to start the season? Dan Heron is an unknown at this point. Is he going to be a Marlin? Is he going to retire? Is he going to pitch on the West Coast? We don't know. He would figure into the rotation if he pitches for us. Phelps, who we got from the New York Yankees, that could be big. He's a good swing man. He can work out of the bullpen or start. And as folks know, Brad Hand has started and relieved. And if Brad Hand is not in the rotation, I suspect he'll start the year in the bullpen. So that's, seven or eight guys right there.
Right.
Then Justin Nicolino, who was terrific pitcher in the Southern League, 22-year-old Tander. I think at some point during the year you're going to see him in Miami. I don't think there's any question. A couple of other young pitchers that are on the roster, Adam Connolly, who's 24 years old, also a left-hander. He could also work out of the bullpen. His problem is he missed almost all of last year, and I would suspect that he'd start the year in AAA, but if he got off to a good start and there was an opening, he could pitch at the big league level. And the other guy I liked is a Dominican, Jose Urena, who got a great arm, 22-year-old right-hander, and he'll probably start the year at AAA, and he's got a chance to pitch in the big leagues this year. Now, this is just my opinion, but these are guys that do have a chance, and then some of the guys in the bullpen the start of the year have had some experience starting, so if you had to go and do that, it wouldn't be terrible. Andre Rienzo, who was with the White Sox and acquired this winter and is on the roster, he's had some experience starting, and there are a couple other guys. Crow is another one who came from Kansas City. So I go back to what I said. You can never have too many candidates to start because of injuries and poor performance. It just happens that way.
No, it certainly does. And hopefully, as you mentioned, alluding to the Royals and the Giants, everybody can stay healthy for the most part. Now, divisional play is certainly going to be a pleasure to watch. It's going to be interesting. Boomer, the Marlins offseason, a lot's been made about the direction in which this team is headed. To you, what move or particular set of moves have the Marlins made that's been the most intriguing?
I think they've all been intriguing in their own way, and I don't think we've ever had a busier, more productive offseason. I guess you could say going into 12 was certainly a busy offseason. But Morris at first base, and we needed to address first base, gives us tremendous power. A guy from South Florida who wants to play here, I think it'll be interesting to see how he does. The team needs speed. The real base stealer on the team was Christian Yelich, although Ozuna can steal a base, and a couple other guys. Stanton actually is a good base stealer, but you're probably not going to have him running a lot. So getting D. Gordon is a big thing in the middle of the infield, and a guy who stole 64 bases last year, that'll be big. You know, there's just a whole bunch of things that happened that are going to make this a better ball club, and certainly Matt Latos, that'll be a big addition as well, fitting into the starting rotation. He's in his final year of arbitration eligibility, has a chance to be a free agent at the end of the year, and you would think this guy will come out with guns blazing. He was hurt a lot last year for the Reds, and if he's healthy, I expect he'll have a real big year. But there are a lot of things this club did, and some of it, I guess you could say, was controversial, but I think the ball club is much improved over last year.
No, I couldn't agree anymore. Marlins Special Assistant Bill Beck with us on the Hot Stove Show tonight. Boomer, when you take a look at the roster as it currently stands, it's, for the most part, rounded into form. With that being said, a fourth outfielder is certainly needed. The Marlins have reportedly signed Don Kelly to a minor league deal, but in recent days, the Ichiro Suzuki talk has picked up a bit. If it were to happen, do you think Ichiro would be a good fit for this ball club as an extra outfielder?
That is a great question. The guy is a Hall of Fame player. He's 156 hits away from 3,000 hits, which would certainly be interesting. I guess the biggest question I would have is he going to be happy in a reduced role? And you say, well, what do you mean? Well, the Marlins certainly hope that Yelich, Ozuna, and Stanton all can play 150 games. Now, we know that injuries happen over the course of the year. Ozuna missed some time last year, hurt his ankle. Stanton was hit in the face. He missed time. So, ideally, that those three guys in the outfield would play 150 games. That would not give much time to Ichiro. Right. And he's been a regular player most of his career. Could he pinch hit? I think so. And could he play on a limited basis? Absolutely. He played 143 games for the Yankees last year, but a lot of those were in a double switch. Well, they don't double switch much over there, but when they'd make a change, he'd go into the outfield or he might hit for a right-handed batter. And I could see that happening. The one thing about this guy, he's in remarkable physical shape, age 41, and he can play all three outfield positions.
Yeah.
I think it would be an interesting move if he ends up playing for the Marlins. And there's no question we need a fourth outfielder.
No, certainly. And it's interesting. If he were to come to the Marlins, terrific. I'm surprised I haven't seen more around the American League, any kind of pitches towards Ichiro in the American League. But nonetheless, talking with Special Assistant Bill Beck on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, one of the most intriguing moves of the offseason to me is second baseman D. Gordon. You've seen a lot of baseball in your day. How much of an impact do you think Gordon has on the Marlins this season?
Well, I think he'll have a lot of impact. I think he'll play very good defense. But the big thing is getting on base and setting the table. If you've got him at the top of the order, Yelich right behind him, and Yelich could really hit third or fourth if you needed to do it. But I think, and, you know, I'm not making out the lineup card, but I'm suggesting that Gordon will probably start the year in the leadoff spot with Yelich hitting second.
Right.
That gives you two guys up front, and we know Yelich is a good guy at getting on base and setting the table. With their speed, you get them on base, and I think it's going to make it really good for Stanton, Morris, Ozuna, whoever hits in those three, four, five spots. I think the Marlins have an opportunity to score a lot more runs.
Yeah, we'll certainly find out. A little over 4 weeks until the start of spring training. Boy, it's always a fun time. Boomer, I know you have been around the game a long time. Spring training's probably one of your favorite parts of the year. All the guys are loose. They're ready to go. Any spring training stories atop the list that always stick out to you from over the years this time of the year?
Oh, jiminy, I don't know. I can't count them up, the number of spring trainings with Kansas City, San Diego, and now with the Marlins. And this will be our 23rd spring training as we go into our 23rd season. I guess the craziest thing was Cocoa Beach in 1993. They were building the stadium up in Brevard County, so the ball club would work out on the back fields there at Carl Barger Complex, and then get on a bus and go over to Cocoa Expo, which was about 15 miles north on 95, and play the exhibition games there. It was an old, dilapidated stadium that they threw some paint on and got through it that first year. And then in 94, the club played in the new stadium up in Brevard County, Space Coast Stadium. But that was quite an experience because when we started in 93, we had brand new players. They'd been in the expansion draft, and everything was sort of by the seat of the pants because everything was new, and it was an exciting time. But I'll never forget that spring training. And then another is just a couple years ago, maybe three or four now, Dave Van Horn and I were going to do the opening game of spring training up there at Brevard County, and Glenn was away. And we got up there, got set up, and it started raining. Well, you know what happens with rain delays? Went through the pregame show, and then we started filling time. 2 hours and 15 minutes later, the tarps came off, and we played baseball. I was so exhausted from talking over that 2 hour and 15 minute period, and Dave Van Horn did a great job leading the conversation, but we were talking about things, where teams trained during World War II when there were travel restrictions in 1944 and 45. Somebody was at Fort Wayne, Indiana. The Boston Red Sox trained at a college facility in the Boston area. I mean, there was a travel limit, and these were the kind of thing we were grasping for straws. And then, of course, the game started. And about the fifth inning, here come all the subs on both the Nationals team and the Marlins. By the time that game ended, I just like, oh, it was something. But it was a lot of fun, and you never know what to expect.
Well, spring training is always a great time. Boomer, last question before we let you go tonight. You've seen some great baseball teams over the years. Compared to the ones you've seen in Miami, though, this team on paper headed into the season, albeit that doesn't mean much, where does this team, given the youth, power, and speed, and some of the great arms in this rotation, stack up to some of the other teams you've seen over the years in Miami?
Well, it's always tough to compare teams, but 97 going in, we had made a lot of moves and added Moises Alou. We had Al Leiter and Kevin Brown leading the rotation. Bobby Bonilla had come over and was going to play third base. I don't have it in front of me, but I think in spring training we went like 26-7. I mean, the record was unbelievable. And Jim Leland, who was the manager at the time, got to a point he didn't want to win all the spring training games because everybody gets hyped up, and quite frankly, while it's a great time of year, the record doesn't reflect anything. And so he would put some guy in from Class A, and darned if the guy wouldn't hit a double up the alley and we'd win the game. And anyway, we ended up with an unbelievable spring training record, and as you know, went on, didn't win the division, but won the got into the playoffs and won the World Series. That was probably going in the team with the highest expectations. There were a lot of expectations because of the names 3 years ago when Jose Reyes was here and yeah, some of the other players, but it never panned out. So expectation-wise, I'd say this is one of the top teams as far, and this team certainly has a chance to compete for the division crown and with two wild card spots. Should be in the hunt all year. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, I hope it is. We've got 162 games to play yet. Boomer, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for taking some time out of your night to chat baseball with us. We'll see you up at Roger Dean Stadium in just about 4 weeks to kick off spring training.
Okay, Kyle, and as they say in broadcasting, stay tuned.
A lot of great insight from Marlins Special Assistant Bill Beck on the Marlins Hot Stove Show here tonight. Don't forget, if you miss any of tonight's show, feel free to check it out tomorrow afternoon on marlins.com/podcast. Coming up next, let's take some phone calls, chat a little baseball, shall we? The number to call in, 866-801-0940. Let's line them up. We'll be right back after this on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 Wins.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. Winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner on 940 Wins.
Right around third, Ozuna the throw to the plate, and Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth.
Miami Sports.
Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show. I'm Kyle Seeloff. Got just about 8 minutes until we close out the hot stove tonight. Marlins questions, you want to talk a little baseball, feel free to give us a call right now, 866-801-0940. Well, thank you. A big thank you to Jared Kosart tonight for joining us. Certainly going to be fun to watch Jared this season. Came over to the Marlins last July, and Bill Beck shared some great stories with us, talked a little Marlins baseball as well. Take a look around the hot stove around Major League Baseball, and we touched on the big Max Scherzer deal in Washington. Well, today the Texas Rangers acquired Brewers ace Giovanni Gallardo. Talked about Scherzer, got the $210 million deal. The Chicago Cubs got Dexter Fowler. Will Chris Bryant be the opening day starter at third base, the prize prospect in the Chicago Cubs organization? And then we have the Marlins, and it's certainly been a fun offseason. It's something that, you know, we haven't seen in a while. You go back to 2012, there were some big names, but you take a look at this team this year, and there's some big names in their own unique way, guys that have kind of blossomed, so to speak, and you know the bullpen is solid, the starting pitching staff is solid. It's certainly going to be fun to watch. Let's go out to the phone line, Lenore in New York. Where will the Marlins finish here this year? Go ahead.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm calling from New York. I follow the Marlins, and I was wondering, how do you feel the Marlins will do come the end of the season? You think there's any hope for, you know, the World Series for them?
Well, I mean, we'll certainly find out. I don't know if we should go as far as to say World Series yet. You take a look at this lineup right now, though, and you look at the starting rotation with Kohler, Cosard, Latos. Some of those guys, Jose comes back in July. I certainly think they're in the mix to win the division. I certainly think they could go beyond that. We'll have to find out, though. It's certainly something interesting to watch. And when Bill Beck joined us earlier, he said, most importantly, it's going to come down to health. And when it comes down to health, you look at the starting rotation a lot. Guys like Tom Kohler, if he can stay healthy, Cosart, how does Jose Fernandez, when he comes back in July, how many starts does he give the Marlins? Maybe 10 to 12 starts throughout the course of the year. Certainly something to keep an eye on. We'll certainly find out as we move along throughout the course of the year. You know, D. Gordon at the top of the lineup, Christian Yelich presumably going to bat second, Stanton third, so on and so forth. You know, Michael Morse will bat fifth. There's one through six, seven guys in the lineup. We'll see how Echevarria hits. We'll see how Ozuna fares. It's stacked one through eight. The starting pitching staff, if they can stay healthy, certainly something to keep an eye on. There's a lot of young arms down in the minor leagues as well that could certainly come up. Lenore, thanks for the call tonight.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Well, it's certainly interesting. I mean, a lot of people, I don't know if we should jump the gun yet. Say World Series, by no means. I think, you know, going back to 2013, a team that won 2013 games, a team that improved 15 games last year. And as Jared Cosart mentioned, you know, this team has expectations now. There was none last year. They, you know, people assumed to an extent 8 to 10 wins, maybe they would improve. They went above and beyond that. All the way into September, the Marlins were competing, and there's expectations now. We'll see how some of the young guys handle that. We'll have to see. Then you have some of the older guys in this lineup, guys like Jeff Mathis, who is a leader in the clubhouse, Jeff Baker, who was terrific for the Marlins last year, and if you're inside of that clubhouse, some of these guys have a huge impact. There's some other guys on the roster as well that we didn't touch on. Will we see them in a Marlins uniform this year? Derek Dietrich is a guy, potentially, to keep an eye on. He's been injury-prone over the course of the last couple of years. With D. Gordon now, where does Dietrich end up? Adani Echevarria, as you know, up the middle with D. Gordon. That's going to be fascinating to watch this season. The double play combination, the speed. Not much power from Etcher Gordon, but you know what? They put the ball in the gap at Marlins Park. They're going to run forever. Hopefully the Marlins can put some runs on the board. And obviously with the outfield, if you caught that story on ESPN yesterday, Buster Olney ranked Marcelo Ozuna, Giancarlo Stanton, and Christian Yelich the best outfield in baseball, 23, 24, and 25 years old, respectively. It's certainly going to be fun to watch those guys out there. Of course, Ozuna. And you take a look at these three guys. They're all potential 300 hitters. I think if there's one guy you take a look at there and say, well, maybe he's going to hit 280, 285 for you, but he could hit 25 home runs, that would be Ozuna. With Giancarlo, we know he can hit 300. We'll have to see how he comes back after getting hit in the face by Mike Friars in Milwaukee towards the back end of last season. But then there's Christian Yelich, who personally I think is going to thrive hitting second in this lineup behind D. Gordon now. And a product of that is you take a look at D. Gordon and what he brings to the table. Obviously, we've talked about it a lot. His ability to get on base, whether it's a bunt, he could slap one in the infield, he can hit a ground ball to second base and beat it out. But once he gets on base, his ability to steal second and third, single-handedly produce a run in the first inning, that's going to be something to keep an eye on because that's going to open up an opportunity for Christian Yelich hitting number two. You hear it all the time in baseball. Pitchers get too preoccupied with guys on base. They slip up. You slip up to a guy like Christian Yelich, he could hit one out of the ballpark, he could drive it into the gap, and then obviously Giancarlo Stanton follows that. Well, certainly a fun outfield, a fun infield, a lot of good pitchers on the staff this year. We'll see how Jeff Mathis and Jared Saltalamacchia fare behind home plate. It's been fun tonight. Been real fun. Make sure you join us next week. Glenn's back for all 2 hours on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. A big thank you to the man behind the glass pressing all the right buttons tonight, Mike Lukomiak. I'm Kyle Seeloff. We'll catch you in just a little over 4 weeks up at Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter. Have a good night.